Good morning, I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome to Radio Times. According to the New York Times, more than 75 retired military officials were recruited by the Pentagon to provide favorable coverage about the Bush administration's war policies and strategies. If you watch broadcast or cable news, you've seen them discussing various facets of the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. The story describes special briefings and meetings as well as tours to Iraq for these analysts. It also found instances when they repeated administration talking points. The Defense Department has denied that these analysts were parroting Pentagon party line. The report also criticizes the networks for not vetting these analysts and revealing in some instances their ties to military contractors and lobbying. NPR was mentioned in this article. This story raises important questions about the relationship between the press and the government and the coverage of the war. And that's our topic for today's Radio Times. Let me get our first two of three guests in on the conversation. William Nash is a retired Army Major General, a military consultant with ABC News, and a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. He served in the Vietnam War and has experience in Bosnia, Kosovo, and Iraq, and has been a guest on Radio Times in the past to talk about the war in Iraq. William Nash, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times. Good morning.
Good morning, Marty.
William Arkin was a military analyst for NBC News TV from 1999 to 2007, where he developed stories, provided background material for correspondents, and searched for on-air military analysts. Arkin is the National Security and Human Rights Fellow at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. He's a consultant for the U.S. Air Force and writes the Early Warning blog for the Washington Post, or I should say for WashingtonPost.com. And William Arkin, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. Good morning.
Thank you.
Let me begin with you, if I could, William Nash. This Times article concludes that the Pentagon was using military analysts to build positive coverage of the war. You were one of the analysts that was cited in this article. Do you agree?
Well, I agree that they certainly went through a considerable effort to make sure we were informed, and a vast majority of their information they gave us was favorable to the arguments they were presenting. But that doesn't necessarily mean the commentary by all was as favorable as they would like to have had.
But do you think their goal was to get favorable commentary on the airwaves?
Of course. I mean, they were running a public information campaign that was designed to gain and maintain the support of the American people for the nation's efforts both in Afghanistan and particularly in Iraq.
But did you feel, as one of those analysts who has, you've been on Radio Times, you've been on other programs as well, that you could speak your mind when doing commentary about the war?
Without a doubt. I think if you go back over some of the things we've talked about, you'd find that I was rather critical of the administration in its conduct of the Iraq War. And there was certainly no hesitation on my part to call it as I saw it.
Can you say that about the other analysts?
Well, you let the other analysts decide whether or not that's what they really believe, but there is no doubt in my mind that a number of analysts were true believers in the effort and were less than militarily critical of the ongoing operations.
Well, let me turn to you, William Arkin, as someone who worked for NBC News, and I guess part of your job was to track down these military analysts?
It was, yes.
And what criteria did you use?
Well, first and foremost, somebody who is knowledgeable and articulate. So this is television, after all. Someone has to be photogenic, and they have to be able to think on their feet and speak clearly. And I've also watched over the years a lot of retired generals debut on television and have their shows canceled pretty quickly because they have nothing to say or they are only parroting the Pentagon line. Not the Pentagon line per se in the sense that I am so fearful that the Pentagon is trying to influence what is said on television. To me, that's not the core of the New York Times story nor the real problem, but more so that they're unable to see beyond the experience of their own military service, so that Army officers really could only see what the Army was doing and Air Force officers could only see what the Air Force was doing. And the thing that particularly disturbed me as an analyst for NBC and as somebody who is a journalist is that the vast majority of those 75 military officers that are described in the New York Times were all retired Army generals, and that there were very few who represented the other service, and mighty few who represented the Air Force, which in Kosovo and Afghanistan and Iraq was the dominant service that was actually engaged in battle. And it would have been nice to have somebody who had the experience and the background and the sources to be able to address what was actually going on.
But
it's sort of like having a podiatrist on television speaking about cancer.
But did you know about this Pentagon program to, if not vet these military officers, at least to give them briefings? They apparently had access to intelligence information. Did you know about this program from the Pentagon?
Well, let me say two things. One, yes, I did. And yes, even as a non-general, I had that same kind of privileges when I sought it. So it's to say that no one ever really approached me and said, Bill Arkin, critic of the military and independent journalist, necessarily is going to be someone who we could get into our pocket. But as a journalist and as a person who worked on television, thereby somebody who has a more powerful ability to influence public opinion, there's no question in my mind that if I called Pentagon Public Affairs to get a briefing or to get information, that I would be a higher priority than somebody from Radio Times.
And
ouch. That's because by appearing on NBC and MSNBC, what I have to say has greater consequence in their mind.
In their mind. No, and I understand that, and it's a little jab at Radio Times, but I understand where you're coming from, William Arkin. But I want to make sure I understand something you said, and I want to hear from William Nash. Your concern was that these military analysts were speaking beyond their area of expertise?
My concern is not that the Pentagon is trying to influence what happens in the media. They have a gigantic propaganda apparatus. Senator William Fulbright wrote about it at great length and called the book The Pentagon Propaganda Machine during the Vietnam War. This is not news. And my concern is that this is not a program of the Bush administration. During the Kosovo War, the Clinton administration did exactly the same thing. And I can tell you that General Wesley Clark, the commander of the Kosovo War, would call me on the phone and try to influence me in terms of what it was that I was saying on the air and writing in the LA Times and the Washington Post. It happens all the time. This is not a nefarious program of the Pentagon. I think where the failure here is it's a failure on the part of the networks to make a clear distinction between commentary and journalism, between what it is that these generals are doing and what it is that other reporters and analysts are doing, and provide balance between a pro-military and a critical military eye. And then secondly, I think it is a general failure in journalism that just doesn't extend to newspapers. I mean, that doesn't extend to just television, but newspapers as well, to fail to disclose both the corporate and partisan relationships that exist between people who are being quoted as experts and what their proclivities are. And today, constantly, I see in the newspapers people being quoted as experts saying X, Y, and Z without it being revealed that they are also at the same time advisors to one of the three presidential candidates.
And I want to pick up on all those very good points, but let me go back to you, William Nash, and this notion that a military expert such as yourself, and I'm not saying that you did this, would speak beyond their expertise. And I wonder whether that's something that has concerned you or did concern you as you listen to some of these military people talk about either strategy in Iraq or the relationship between Sunnis and Shia, for instance.
Well, probably. But I think Bill Arkin overstates the fact that an Army officer might not know something about the employment of air forces in an air-land battle campaign. And for the most part, the folks that have been speaking have broad experience. Now, there are obviously exceptions to that. And I was thinking of a number of Air Force officers represented that unfortunately probably have less experience in employment of air forces than Mr. Arkin would like to have. But It's easy to be asked a lot of questions that go beyond your expertise, but that's why those of us that have employed joint forces and have lived and operated in the Mideast and have been involved in a couple of wars and a couple of peace operations find that some of the networks see that we're useful to the dialogue that the American people should have access to.
But do you think there is, and this is to you, William Nash, I don't know if it's too much deference, but a certain kind of deference to, you know, a military official. They might have, you know, all sorts of awards and things on their chest, that when the public or even an interviewer sees them, that there's a deference that goes along with that.
Well, now, the analysts that you see aren't wearing medals or anything.
I understand that.
They're all retired, and they're hired by networks based on, as Bill Arkin said, their ability to speak and their ability to present a case, and maybe I guess I work radio a lot because I'm not quite as good looking as some of those guys. But the fact of the matter is that most of the folks, or many of the folks, let's just say it that way, have a degree of expertise whose voice is at least equal to the journalist that might be making the same commentary.
Do you think, though, William Arkin, this is sort of a broad question, but when there is a military analyst on television, we'll say, or radio, or in some kind of a live broadcast, that the hosts, the moderators, ask tough enough questions?
Well, I think that the most hosts and most moderators who have very little military experience get their entire knowledge of foreign policy and war from the New York Times, as do most politicians, for that matter. So the answer intrinsically within our society is absolutely no. There aren't tough questions asked, but I'm not particularly concerned that somehow that the tough questions, if they were asked, wouldn't be answered because of this supposed nefarious Pentagon program. I'm much more concerned that there isn't a cadre of military analysts like myself. Who I served in the military from 1974 to 1978. Trust me, everything I ever learned in the military I've long forgotten. but I don't think that there is a large enough cadre of civilian analysts of military affairs who are sought or who are on television who might have a perspective, and I don't mean a peace perspective, but a perspective that is different than someone who has spent 30 years of their lives in a profession of arms.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation, and I have a third guest who will be joining us as well. We're talking about the role of military analysts, how their expertise is relevant in conversations related to war, certainly the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the responsibility of the media in using retired military as analysts. 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Support for WHYY comes from Freelancers Union, a nonprofit group providing advocacy, networking opportunities, as well as health, dental, and disability insurance to qualified members. Details at freelancersunion.org.
The Philadelphia Museum of Art supports WHYY and takes on a new look and sound with Art After Five, a blend of jazz and international entertainment every Friday night. This Friday, Miro Dance Theater premieres an original living performance sculpture commissioned by Art After Five, using imagery and themes inspired by Frida Kahlo's paintings. Light fare, cocktails, and guided tours are available. Details online at philamuseum.org.
It's 2 days before the end of the spring membership drive here at WHYY, and we want to make sure that you make your pledge of support right now. That phone number is 1-888-345-9499. We are working off a very generous challenge from the Independence Foundation, and they are challenging listeners to Radio Times to become members and supporters. And if we hear from 350 people, they will give us $10,000. 1-888-345-9499. Make that pledge. Thanks.
Borgata Hotel, Casino, and Spa supports WHYY and presents comedian Bill Maher in concert Saturday, May 31st at 8 p.m. Bill Maher at Borgata's Event Center in Atlantic City, 866-904-TIX or theborgata.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Joining us now is former U.S. Army Major Robert Bevilacqua. He was a Special Forces officer from 1985 to 2000 and a military analyst for Fox News from 2001 to 2005 when he resigned. He continues to work for the defense industry and joins us as we talk about this relationship between the military and the press. And Robert Bevilacqua, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Tell us about the first meeting you had with the Pentagon.
The first meeting consisted of probably the most impressive cast of characters they were able to pull together. There was former chiefs of staff, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs. So it was a large crowd, a lot of stars, and then there was little old me, probably the lowest ranking guy in the room. And I had a seat at the table like everybody else. It was very impressive, and you felt honored to be brought back into the fray and to be able to sit down and listen to and hear the concerns of the Secretary of Defense. It was a very impressive session.
And what did you come away with from that session?
I think the word that comes to mind is propaganda, and I don't drink Kool-Aid. I saw their talking points. I understood completely where they were coming from, and I'm not a sock puppet. That's the way I viewed it. Why else would they bring in a resigned Army major to sit down and listen to what the SecDef has? It's because I had a microphone, and I had a large microphone. I was on Fox constantly doing dozens of hits a week, so naturally I had to be, you know, employed to help, present their side of the story. Not that it was right or that it was wrong. It was their side of the story. The problem I had with that was I didn't get hired to provide Don Rumsfeld's side of the story. I was hired, I believe, to provide Bob Bevilacqua's analysis based on what he did when he was in the military.
So going back to the time you were on Fox, whose side of the story did you give, Bob Bevilacqua's or Donald Rumsfeld?
I gave my side. I gave my side from day one, and I refused to be a cheerleader. And that resulted in me receiving less and less interviews as time went by, and I became known as the Fox News' occupation war critic.
And that was a message from Fox?
Yeah, it was loud and clear. It was never articulated to me. It's just that I didn't get invited onto the shows that I used to get invited on.
And you believe that's because you were criticizing the war?
I know it was.
Okay.
I became a very uncomfortable interview. And after having, lived in Iraq on the economy, not on a military base, on the economy with the Iraqis and seeing how the war was going, it was very hard for them to get into a debate with me. And Fox has got some brilliant folks. And I heard some of the two other gentlemen that were on talking about the level of the questions that were coming from the reporters. David Asman gives an incredible interview. He does a lot of research, so he doesn't throw you a softball. And it got to where it was too painful to have these discussions with me because it wasn't going to be the angle they were looking for.
And do you think Fox was looking for a certain angle?
I think Fox was looking for fair and balanced, and in the fact of having somebody on that could say things were going well was as important as having somebody on that was saying things were going bad. The fact of the matter is the anchor's final position on most topics where things were going positive, and it was to support the administration. And I'm all for supporting an administration at war, but you have to talk to reality, and when our troops are in a position that is not favorable to them because the wrong decisions were made and because the wrong people were put in charge, everybody has to step up to the plate and call it exactly the way they see it.
So did you leave Fox, or did they show you the door?
No, I asked to be released in April of 2005.
And why was that?
It was no longer fun.
Fun
it
meaning?
It was no longer fun.
What do you mean by fun?
Fun for me was being able to go in and provide analysis and do something that I thought was going to make a difference and be able to engage in civil discourse. And when I no longer had that ability and the civil discourse wasn't welcomed, why would I want to continue to do that?
Did you ever hear from the Pentagon about any of your comments when you were on Fox?
I received phone calls from people in the Pentagon that I knew, positive and negative. I received phone calls from people on active duty that I knew, positive and negative. And it's always a mixed bag. Everybody's got an opinion. And God knows I'm not right. I mean, some of the stuff I said and the predictions that I made based on what I knew were inaccurate. And that's the nature of warfare. So I'm no different than anyone else. But I'll tell you what, it's my analysis. It's my analysis. If right or wrong, it's mine.
So what do you take away from this article in the New York Times?
It's fairly accurate in that there was a lot of cheerleading. To say that the Pentagon hung contracts over people's heads and that the guys that were on TV supporting them were going to receive contracts or benefit from the remarks is just about ludicrous. I know how contracts are awarded. I know the process that you have to go through in order to receive a contract, and it just doesn't work that way. Occasionally, there are sole source contracts that are issued, but still, it has to be a compelling case. Nobody gets it because, well, this guy talks good about us on Fox News. That's totally unrealistic.
Well, what I also saw in the article was that some of these analysts had contracts, but that was not revealed either to the public or maybe even to the networks.
And you know, I'm not so sure why that would have to be revealed. And one of the things that Fox did well is they said you cannot promote yourself, your company, or what you do for a living. So to have me get on the air and say I'm Bob Bevilacqua, a military analyst, and I'm also the vice president of Bevilacqua Associates or some other bogus company that provides weaponry to the government, you know, that's promoting myself. That's forcing people to go to my website and take a look at me. Fox won't do that because that's self-promotion. So I understand where they're coming from.
But doesn't it also withhold information from the public about who you actually are?
If the public doesn't think that a retired military officer that put his life on the line and served his country isn't going to, for the most part, support the administration, excuse me, or support the military, they probably shouldn't be watching the program. It's not like you've got a bunch of leftist people that go into the military because they don't like their government and they're not going to support their chain of command. Almost everyone in the Army, for the most part, is right-wing oriented, and the other services are about the same. They typically vote Republican. So if folks don't know that, if they don't have the ability to do that or their own assessment, then the target audience is a little bit more shallow than I originally thought.
Well, you know, I'd love to talk some more, but I want to get our other two guests in on the conversation, and thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Yes, ma'am. Take care.
You too. Former U.S. Army Major Robert Bevilacqua, who was a Special Forces officer from 1985 to 2000, a military analyst for Fox News from 2001 to 2005. When he resigned, he continues to work for the defense industry. And let me get our other two guests back in on the conversation. William Arkin was a military analyst for NBC TV News from 1999 to 2007, where he developed stories, provided background materials for correspondents, and searched for on-air military analysts. He served in the military from 74 to 78. He's now the National Security and Human Rights Fellow at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, a consultant for the U.S. Air Force, and writes the Early Warning blog for WashingtonPost.com. And William Nash is a retired Army Major General, a military consultant with ABC News, and a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. He served in the Vietnam War and has experience serving in Bosnia, Kosovo, and the Iraq conflicts. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. William Arkin, going back to you, what we heard from Robert Bevilacqua was that if viewers of TV shows don't know that the military, that military analysts are pro-military, then, you know, they don't, they're uninformed or they're even ignorant.
Well, there's so much of what he said that is overstated, so he's perfect for television.
that's what you look for?
Well, I think that, yes, it is what they look for. And again, it has to be articulate, it has to be quick, it has to you know, be humorous, it has to be, you know, of the correct gravity of the moment, whatever that moment might be. What I found most objectionable about what he said, though, was setting up the dichotomy that the point of analysts, one way or the other, is to tell us whether things are going well or whether things are going badly. Mm-hmm. And I guess I see my role as a journalist and as an analyst for NBC News at much more to tell the viewership what's going on. not whether it's going well or it's going badly. I guess I have enough faith in the body politic to make that determination for themselves if they're actually given enough information. And so the question is, how much information can they be given, and how much information can you impart? But I think that in fact that the Iraq War has made this whole enterprise much more complex and much more difficult because it's so controversial within our society, and so there is a greater propensity to want to have people who are professional experts on the subject or who have experience in the military to pass judgment as to whether or not their public opinion, their opinion about the war is correct or incorrect. And look, there are a lot of retired generals out there who are speaking out against the war and who have been critical of the war. I don't think that that's the issue here. I think that the issue here is whether or not the news media in general provides enough military information, information of military import, to help the public understand what's going on so that the public can come to some conclusion about their consent for the use of force. And in the end, the public is not well served if the news media is stuck or trapped or traps itself in a syndrome in which it assumes that it is providing enough context and enough information to the American public only through or mostly through the use of retired flag officers to do that. And that has been their tendency, because you certainly could not stack up 75 equal civilian experts on the military like myself who have gotten equal airtime or who have managed to convey to the American public with the same frequency their analysis of what's going on.
Well, and William Nash, let me get you to speak to that. And as someone who has, you know, certainly worked for media and has been a commentator, but obviously watches and listens and reads about the war in Iraq, do you agree with William Arkin, is that while it might be legitimate to have these military people as analysts, there's sort of a gaping hole or an imbalance when you look for other points of view?
Well, I think it's very dangerous to underestimate the cumulative judgment of the American people. And the fact of the matter is, from what I read and hear and see, the American people have come to a general conclusion about the affairs of Iraq and the like, and have formed a judgment that balances a number of sources of information from the government, from the analysts like Bill Arkin, from old generals like me, and have come to a conclusion, and a lot of other folks, both in electronic and written media, have come to a pretty sound conclusion on the state of the conflict, and have great reservations about it, which is probably as fair and balanced judgment as you can find. So, you know, if you look at any one source, you can certainly have great angst over a variety of issues. The retired generals, the analysts are qualified in certain areas, certainly as qualified as some of the journalists that are asking the questions, in many cases more so. But I think the cumulative effect of all of this is a judgment by the American people that comes out about right, and that's been true for many, many years.
I wonder, and I'm not trying to get the press off the hook here, but there is a section in this article in the New York Times where William Nash, talk about a meeting, I guess it was held by Donald Rumsfeld, to discuss, I guess, what was going on in Iraq, and there were some bullet points that, and this is according to the article, that Rumsfeld wrote a memorandum distilling their collective guidance on bullet points. The two bullet points focus on the global war on terror, not simply Iraq, the wider war, the long war. The other bullet point, link Iraq to Iran. Iran is the concern. If we fail in Iraq or Afghanistan, it will help Iran. But you are quoted as saying, I walked away from that session with total disrespect for my fellow commentators, perhaps with one or two exceptions. Can you flesh that out for us?
Well, It was an off-the-record meeting, and just because other folks are talking about it, I don't feel that it's too appropriate for me to comment. But I will say that I was quoted by another news agency at the time while walking out what I thought of it. And I said I thought it was a blankety-blank love-in. And there were a number of people in the room that were that went to extensive efforts to assure the senior military official that was there that that he was doing great work.
A kind of a positive reinforcement for the work that they were doing.
Oh well, that's right. And so I just I was, like I say, there were a lot of issues and there were some disingenuous answers given. One of the things that you need to understand about all this is when we go to these meetings, and there are some people that of course take anything hook, line, and sinker. I mean, some people even believe everything they hear on your radio show.
I know. But not everybody, though. I have to tell you that.
Well,
but go
that's
ahead.
Right. Not everybody. And the fact of the matter is when you go on visits to Iraq and you talk to soldiers there and you hear yourself saying the same words 30 years earlier. I heard a lot of things in Iraq coming out of the mouths of junior and mid-level officers that were exactly how I thought as I left Vietnam. You go to a meeting in the Pentagon and they try to throw some numbers at you, and you look the senior military official in the eye and say, these are impossible numbers and you're spoofing us trying to give us this. You ask hard questions and you get very, very evasive answers. I asked a senior military official about how he was measuring civilian casualties and murder rates and other criminal activities in Baghdad, and I got a lecture on two different occasions over 6 month periods apart on the murder rate in Detroit. And when you get that kind of nonsense at these meetings, you can't expect us to go out on the air and sing hallelujah to the chorus of the Department of Defense.
But that's based on your experience in Iraq. I know we've had you on several times because I know about your experience in nation building.
Well, that's what they hire us for, is that experience and that judgment. And, I mean, there's obviously got to, you know, you have to have integrity as you present the present your case, and I get paid a reasonable amount of money by ABC News to give them analysis that helps they try to include in their stories to help the American people understand what's going on.
And have you
is it good enough? No, the tyranny of time always impacts on the ability to present the news. That's why people have blogs and people have other ways to put out the word, but that's not what I do.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation. I do want to get some callers in on the conversation, and that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Talking about a New York Times article about the role of military analysts and how their experience is relevant to conversations related to the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, the responsibility of the media in using retired military as analysts. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. You watch the news. You listen to the news. What do you think? William Nash and William Arkin, our guests. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, the teachers and school support professionals of the Pennsylvania State Education Association, 185,000 men and women working for great public schools for every child. PSEA, Leadership for Public Education.
The Nonprofit Center at LaSalle University School of Business presents More Mission for Your Money at its annual Nonprofit Strategies Forum, June 3rd at the Hub at the Cira Center. Internationally recognized nonprofit expert Peter Brinkerhoff will share his insights into ways to lead a mission-based nonprofit organization. Information at 215-951-1701 or on the web at LaSalleNonprofitCenter.org. The Nonprofit Center supports WHYY.
It's 2 days before the end of the spring membership drive here at WHYY, and we want to make sure that you make your pledge of support right now. That phone number is 1-888-345-9499. We are working off a very generous challenge from the Independence Foundation, and they are challenging listeners to Radio Times to become members and supporters. And if we hear from 350 people, they will give us $10,000. 1-888-345-9499. Make that pledge. Thanks.
Supporting WHYY 10,000 villages in Chestnut Hill, Ephrata, Exton, Media, Philadelphia, Princeton, and Souderton. Celebrating World Fair Trade Day, Saturday, May 10th. 10,000villages.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, and we've got calls coming in to 1-888-477-9499. Talking with William Arkin, he's been a military analyst for NBC TV. He's also the National Security and Human Rights Fellow at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, a consultant for the U.S. Air Force, writes the Early Warning blog for WashingtonPost.com, and William Nash, an adjunct senior fellow for conflict prevention and director of the Military Fellows Program at the Council on Foreign Relations. He's a retired Army Major General, a military consultant with ABC News. Let me get some callers into the conversation, including Johnny from Kensington joining us. Johnny, go ahead, your Radio Times.
Yeah, I would just like to say that I think straight up that this is a military campaign that was conducted on U.S. soil. I mean, it's as simple as that. I mean, I can hear these rationales, and I can hear the reasoning and the justification. And it was a psychops campaign that was conducted on the American people with lies and propaganda. It's outrageous. There should be court martials. Heads should roll.
Well, Johnny.
Where's the shame?
Well,
where's the shame?
I hear you, and I appreciate the call to Radio Times. William Arkin, what do you think? Or what
do
you say?
I think that we shouldn't be too stunned that there's gambling going on in the casino. The Pentagon is obviously trying to influence things, and I don't think that this program was quite as secretive as anybody thinks. I mean, their analysts and their being influenced. So I don't necessarily see it in that way. But having said that, I do think that Bill Nash is a little bit wrong in characterizing the American public's lack of support for the war in Iraq. I think that if one scratched the surface, one would find out that that the American public's lack of support for the war in Iraq is far more the result of its lack of believing the American government. That it's lost faith in being able to believe what the American government has to say, and so part and parcel of that is that this New York Times story kind of amplifies that people probably have good reason not to believe what the U.S. government says, and not only that, but not believe what they see in the news media. And so if we're getting to the point where people are confused as to what authorities they can rely upon and who they can believe, then we are harming our democracy in a way that is very profound, because the public is being asked all the time to consent to the use of force and to support the armed forces, which they are not a part of. We don't have a draft. We don't have national service. This is a service that works on our behalf, and so therefore we have to consent and pay for it.
Well,
and
you know,
we don't have the tools to do
there.
It. And what the New York Times story really reveals.
Hold on. Just a very quick, let me get William Nash in on it, because we do have some more callers, and I have go ahead.
Bill makes a great point, he states my case far better than I did. Despite all this stuff, despite all the hoopla, the American people have come to pretty much the right opinion, because they don't believe the hoopla. And they see through it, so the cumulative effect is that it comes out about right.
But, you know, and this is just picking up something, William Nash, and this is in this New York Times article, where an email message between an analyst, actually for Fox News and radio, a email between this individual and the Pentagon, where he says, please let me know if you have any specific points you want covered or what you would prefer to downplay. He wrote this to the Pentagon January 2007, before President Bush went on TV to describe the surge strategy in Iraq. I'm quoting from the New York Times there. But what we're, you know, what we're in this individual's case, what we're getting are instructions from the Pentagon about what to say on broadcast.
Well, you know, and the person that wrote that email, I'll have to account for that. I've had conversations with friends of mine who were on active duty, and I would ask them what was on their mind, and if there was anything they wanted me to know, make sure I knew it. That doesn't mean that I was going to parrot it. It means that I trusted the judgment of the people I was talking to in those cases and wanted to hear their perspective and add it to, if you will, the calculations on how I came to my conclusions. But if you are sending emails like the one you described from the article, and then you're the parrot or you're the repeater of the information, then obviously I've got to, you know, we all have problems in that type of work.
Let me get, Johnny, thanks for the call. We got Linda from Princeton joining us. Hi, Linda. Go ahead, your Radio Times.
Good morning. Marty. It's quite a topic this morning. The New York Times seems to be the focal point of your discussion this morning. And I wanted to ask the two or three people you've got there what they think the audience is for this news or propaganda, whatever one would call it. The New York Times has a fairly well-heeled audience that thinks it's being well-informed. However, most of the people I've spoken with who read it are shocked to find out what's actually going on the ground. Like, why didn't the New York Times tell them? And I look at the New York Times only to see what the government line is. I don't read it for news or anything to believe. I look to see what we're being asked to believe.
Are you talking about specifically the New York Times or what the New York Times article said about these military analysts? Because that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, historically about what the New York Times bent is, which is to de-emphasize the seriousness of what's going on. And if you could give me just a second.
You know what, Linda, that's a little off target for what we're talking about.
Sorry.
That's okay.
But
no,
what do they believe the audience is?
Okay,
what
fair
segment of the population for these military analysts?
Okay, that's fair enough. And let me toss actually that back to you, William Arkin. And I guess going back to this particular article, I mean, the audience is the American public, is it not?
Well, you know, in our day of electronic media and the internet, we no longer live in a world in which the news media is segmented. If I want to read the Karachi Times every day, I could go and do it. So we certainly have a lot of information available to us, and the audience is certainly driven by a lot of different mandates on the part of media. But I wouldn't say that the New York Times goes to bed every night and says we're writing for a certain segment of society. And that sort of diverts us from the issue that we're discussing today. I mean, today I think that after listening to the conversation and a couple of your callers, you know, the bottom line is that there's this sort of false belief, and I've heard it, Marty, in your own questioning, that just because somebody wears a uniform or wore a uniform for 30 years, that they have integrity, that they have intelligence, that they know anything about the military, and now I'm recognizing that's the fundamental problem.
In what way?
I've taught at the Air University, and I've had brilliant students and really stupid students, and I know dozens of general officers, and some of them are really well tuned with American society and understand politics and the world, and some of them are so internalized to their institutions they couldn't tie their shoe if it wasn't black and spit shined. And so I think that we tend to defer to this authority. We tend to believe that just because somebody wore the uniform, they have special information and that they have some level of integrity. And not only does that influence how we see commentators on television and in the news media, I'm afraid it influences how we see military commanders and officials when they're on active duty. We defer, and then when they prove to be wrong or fallible or manipulative, we're shocked. And maybe we need to have just a little bit more of a jaundiced view of the military profession, and we need to be a little bit more skeptical about the fact that just because somebody wears a uniform and that their motto is duty, honor, country, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's what their personal ethic or the capability is.
Right, and I believed I was trying to get to that earlier with my question about deference, but I wonder if I could turn this back to you, William Nash, in terms of what you see then as the responsibility of military analysts as yourself when talking about the war and thinking about who that audience is. And what do you see as an analyst? What's your job?
Well, first of all, I've really got to reply to what Bill said there.
Please
because
do.
The fact of the matter is I've had some teachers that were pretty stupid, too,
well,
and also some journalists. So to paint the brush on one side of the picture is pretty unfair. I try to help the outfit that I work for, ABC News, to explain to the American people what's going on. It's like when I appear on your show and we discuss a variety of issues, I'm trying to, in the military context, now I've got a little bit of experience being a political operative in post-conflict societies also, and also have a very strong belief that military operations are intended to achieve political objectives. So there's intertwined political, military, and in fact, economic, social aspects to all of this as you look at circumstances of Iraq, Afghanistan, Kosovo, and wherever. But it's very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
It's very intense. It's very dangerous for the people involved, and I think it's important for the American people to understand what's going on. And I think there's a bird's eye view and there's a worm's view of all of this, and there's a intermediate view, and it's important to present to the American people a wide variety of opinions and views and issues, and a part of that has to do with domestic politics, and other consultants and other analysts can talk about that. Some of it has to do with history, and you need to have historians talk about a variety of issues impacting on the current events. And there's some military aspects that a fellow that's been involved in war and conducted operations have a little bit of experience in that thing, and maybe even have studied it a bit, then can talk and try to provide a perspective to the American people, all done in a very constrained way, hopefully without an agenda that's not transparent, but you just try to help folks figure it out. And like I say, when it's all said and done, the American people have proven over the years to come out about right on the issues.
And this is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen.
And thanks so much, Marty. Hey, what do you think of that discussion? That was good. I enjoyed that. That was great.
I'm Susan Greenbaum, one of the producers of Radio Times, here with my colleague Alan, too. We are riveted by this conversation. We had a feeling it would be interesting, but in a way it exceeded my expectations. Look, first I'll give you the phone number. 1-888-345-9499, WHYY.org. That's the place to pledge online. My hunch is you tune into Radio Times day in and day out simply for conversations like the one you just heard. It's a challenging conversation, not a simple conversation, complicated conversation, but certainly a worthwhile conversation. And we were talking about the role of military analysts and the media, and based on an article that ran in the New York Times last week. Look, we talk to military analysts all the time, and in a way, this sort of made us double think about how
we
do certain things. Anyway, that phone number is 1-888-345-9499. Alan, why don't you expand on that a little bit?
Well, no, I mean, just I want to remind folks that we are the drive ends tomorrow,
yep.
And we do have a challenge that's underway. And our deadline for Radio Times is high noon tomorrow. Now, you guys already know this, is we only take a couple
like
of minutes.
I should play some Western music. Go ahead.
A couple of minutes out of Radio Times in order to ask for your support.
Yep.
So we're only talking about between now and Friday at 12 noon. We're talking about maybe 22
minutes.
Maybe.
I don't think it's that much. But
in order
ahead.
To make maybe. This challenge. If we can hear from 350 listeners pledging their support to Radio Times. Now, we have done a lot of effort. 240 have already pledged their support. Then the Independence Foundation will throw in $10,000 to the programming budget for WHYY. That's what's at stake. We want to build on that right now. So make that call because it only counts when you call during Radio Times. 1-888-345-9499.
And we should mention that coming up in hour two of Radio Times is another, I think, interesting conversation about two of the presidential candidates have proposed a little holiday on the gas tax to lower prices at the pump. Well, it's an interesting idea, one that's come under some fire by critics who say it's mere politics. And
Obama isn't for it, right?
No, he's not. But anyway, it's an interesting conversation, and one we hope you'll stay tuned for. Look, we have a hunch you tune in and day out, 10 to 12 a.m. You listen to Marty. You rely on her for interesting conversations. And we kind of approach, as producers, we approach these shows as an opportunity to provide you with information that is of interest to you, that will be helpful to you, and information that you may not be able to, you may not have the time to read about, to read a book or a fiction or nonfiction or to read a lengthy article. We kind of do the homework for you and let you listen to those conversations. We're hoping you agree that this is a program worth your support. In the form of a membership to WHYY, please do give us a call at 1-888-345-9499. There are students from Friends Central School here to take your phone call. You can also pledge online at whyy.org.
You know, I really do hope that you enjoyed that last hour because, I mean, I think that's one of the things that Radio Times does really well is where we take an issue. Yes, we get it out of the paper, and then, you know, we bring some of the folks, sometimes they're quoted in the paper, sometimes they're ones that we think could add something to that discussion. But, you know, reading it and then having people live discuss it and have the ability to call in and ask your own questions.
Right, to interact with the folks behind the headlines.
I mean, that's in its own way, it's a unique experience, and I really like the way Marty has been doing this for like 20 years. Hoping you appreciate that, we're asking you to pledge your support right now, folks, because the Independence Foundation Challenge is way to extend your dollars a lot further. 1-888-345-9499.
And don't forget, you can also pledge online at whyy.org. If a gift will entice you to join up, so be it. Here's what we have to offer.
Okay, I like it.
For your membership level of $75, we'll send you a WHYY grocery bag, and that's one of those.